Good afternoon, and my name is Jessica Matthews, president of the Carnegie Endowment. I want to welcome you all here and thank all of you who braved the who swam here today to join us. I'm very pleased to welcome you into the latest in a series that we've been having of discussions about the future of Afghanistan, a subject that is of central importance not only to that country itself, but to so many other U.S. and Western interests and world interests. Prior to the NATO summit in Bucharest, we heard from Dr. Abdullah, former foreign minister of Afghanistan, and from Dr. Jalali, the country's former interior minister. And this afternoon, we are very honored to host Ambassador Kai Ida, who was recently appointed by the Secretary General to be his special representative for and head of the special mission to assistance mission to Afghanistan. Ambassador Ida previously served with the UN as the Secretary General Special Envoy to Kosovo in 2005 and Special Representative to Bosnia in 1997 and 98. In addition, as a member of the Norwegian Foreign Service, he has served as Norway's Special Advisor on the Balkans, Ambassador to responsibility to Croatia, has been the perm rep to NATO, and ambassador to the OSCE. Ambassador Ida, it's clear from your experience why the Secretary General would have turned to you for this enormous responsibility. A deep and acute knowledge of how NATO works, real experience, firsthand experience of UN operations in the field, an experience with the comparably complex political situation in Bosnia and Kosovo, all of that seems to be a resume made to order for this particularly difficult job. And there can be few more vital roles on the foreign policy stage in the next few years than yours. Almost 7 years after 9/11 now, and after the U.S. intervention in Afghanistan, that country's future remains very much in doubt. The Taliban is resurgent. President Karzai's hold over Afghan polity has been considerably diminished. And the impact of Pakistan's recent elections is yet to be felt. And that's just the beginning. And while there appears to be a consensus of rhetoric among the international community, the role and objectives and strategy remain unclear, lacking in coordination, particularly on the civilian side, which will be your responsibility, and the real willingness to act and make a commitment is very much in doubt. So all of these issues are very much on our minds here in Washington. We're eager to hear how it looks now from your new position, and we thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I must say then from the outset that I've been in my current job now for 1 month, out of which I've spent half traveling abroad. So that means about 15 days on the ground. And this is an area where you do not become an instant expert, as you know. But I have also in my previous capacities as political director of the Norwegian Foreign Ministry and also as a NATO ambassador, of course, visited Afghanistan a number of times. What are the tools that I have available, mainly when I took up my job now? First of all, and this is important, I do feel that I have the broad confidence of the international community. I have been traveling in Europe for a week to London, Paris, Brussels, and to Berlin. And I did feel that very strongly. And I feel it perhaps even more strongly here with the kind of program that I will have here in Washington over the next couple of days. I do believe that there is a strong support for the job that I and the mission will now do. And that there is a strong support for an expanded UN role. which means also that we have to look at our own mission and see how we can make sure that the UNAM and the UN on the ground has the resources required to carry out that job. And second, I must say, I feel that I have the strong confidence of the Afghan leadership and the president, President Karzai, and members of the government have received me all very generously and in a very open way. That is one important tool. If you do not have that, then it will be very difficult. But then also, I must say, on the other hand, following the discussions at the UN in March, there is also now a sharper mandate. It's a mandate which highlights a number of issues and in a way sets the priorities for the mission and for me. And perhaps I should spend a few minutes going through what I see as the most important issues and that are highlighted in that mandate. First of all, coordination. And everybody now talks about coordination, which is good. But what I see also is that more and more countries talk about their readiness to be coordinated. And that is a breakthrough. That is a breakthrough. If we can prove in the weeks and months ahead that readiness is there, then I think we can get quite far. Because what is happening today? We have a very fragmented international community, strong and fragmented international community, meeting a fragmented and weak Afghan administration. That is not a recipe for success. We have to bring the international community together through greater aid effectiveness, through more coherent policies, and then we have to help the Afghan government get their act better together in a more coherent policy. That will certainly be hard, but it's for me one of the first priorities that we face. And therefore, we are also going through the coordination mechanisms that we have on the ground. And you know how it is. Once such mechanisms are put in place, they very easily become bureaucratic, cumbersome, with I don't know how many contact groups and working groups under the structures that are put in place. And all of a sudden, it becomes a process-oriented consultation process and not a delivery-oriented process. We have to get away from that. And we are now working on how we can make the structure as lean and as mean as possible with regard to bringing countries together around what must be the focus of our work. Coordination is one, delivery-oriented consultations and coordination. And then the civil-military coordination. There is an impression, of course, that the military have their campaign and have their strategies and the civilians theirs, or perhaps many. And that there are so many national agendas and NGO agendas out there in the field across the country. We have to bring this together, and particularly the relationship between the civilians and the military. That is also one of the most prominent parts of my mandate. You can imagine that with 11 years behind me at NATO, and four of them as permanent representatives, that is very much my instinct, to move towards a greater civilian-military coordination. But it must be a civilian-military coordination which is not based on security-related issues. It must be built on a political vision of where we want to go. It cannot be so that the civilian-military relationship is the military carrying out their campaign and asking the civilians, where are you now, to fill in after us. We have to be able to draw up a plan for that kind of coordination which is political in nature and not security-related in nature. And I would like to do that. But I must say also, while doing so, we must remember that the UN and NATO, ISAF, has two very different roles. And I do not want our role, our political role, in any sense to be compromised through that relationship with the closer relationship with the military. We have to have a relationship which inspires confidence with the military, but also inspires confidence with the NGO community, with the development community, with the humanitarian community, so that we can, through our cooperation with the military, also contribute to expanding that humanitarian space that is so important. And one other element in this. The UN mission may at one stage be called on to play a political role in support of the Afghan government in political processes that may lie ahead of us. And in order to be able to do that, we have to be seen as a mission with a distinct and independent political mandate. Is it possible to do both these things at the same time? Yes, I believe it is, and I believe it is absolutely necessary, and that we will manage. There was, of course, as you will remember, when there was a discussion about Paddy Ashton, the question, should he wear one or two or three hats? I have one hat, and I'm very comfortable with that one hat. And I believe to have three hats is really too cumbersome to be able to do the job that we should do. With three hats, I think that other players in the international community, other components of the Afghan society, will always ask, which hat does he have on now? Is it the UN hat, the NATO hat, or the EU hat? There must be no doubt that I wear one hat, and that is the UN hat. And I think politically, for the UN, for NATO, for the humanitarian community, this is right. This is right. We can have three people wearing different hats, a UN hat, a NATO hat, EU hat, but they should be different people and with the UN in the lead. And that, I believe, is what is also recognized broadly by the international community today. In order to do this, in order to play a greater role in the civilian and military relationship, we also have to look at how can we expand the UN mission across the country. Today we have 8 regional offices and 9 provincial offices. We do intend, and we are today studying, where can we expand and how can we expand. Of course, we will do so with due regard to the security situation, but also with regard to identifying how and where can we be most useful. But I foresee that in some time from now, the UN mission will expand further beyond where we are today. We want to expand our role in the field and be more useful in the outreach program around across the country. Governance. We're supposed to support the Afghan government in governance issues, creating good governance. There, I must say also, a good start has been made through the creation of what is called the Independent Directorate on Local Government last year. And it's already making progress, and we see that on the ground in replacing governors and also in modernizing the structure of administration at other levels. We certainly want to support that and do our best to build up under what is happening today under the leadership of Mr. Popal, who is the head of the IDLG. And I'll come back to this because we need to go beyond this part of governance. But this is one of our roles. Then with regard to humanitarian assistance, we also have to play a role as part of our mandate. We are today in a situation where we do not know what the humanitarian needs are across the country, partly because of security reasons, but partly because of lack of capability in the international community. We want to build up a stronger capability to assess what the humanitarian problems and crises are, so that we can address them more effectively together with other international agencies. And we've seen that very recently. And you see it in other countries. The food problem, the rising food prices, are also a serious problem for Afghanistan. And we have to help them address it. But it will need short-term, medium-term, and long-term solutions. And on the short term, of course, getting the food required into Afghanistan, be able to assess what the needs are and to distribute to those who need the most. This is an acute problem that we have to address. Then let me mention also the reconciliation program. It's being mentioned more and more often, and it will be an issue that we have to address more profoundly in the period ahead of us. And let me say on this, we are asked to play a role in our mandate in support of the Afghan government. There are certain principles that must lie at the basis for any such process, and that is, first of all, it must be led by the Afghan government and with the support of the international community. The international community can never play a leading role in this respect. It is as with the military campaign. It is not the internationals who will win hearts and minds of Afghans. It is the Afghans themselves. That we must understand. And I'm not sure that is fully understood everywhere. That's the first principle. And then second, it must be based on the Constitution and what we have achieved over the last few years. We cannot see a reconciliation process where we are entering into discussions which would compromise all the important things we have achieved with regard to the participation of women in society, with regard to girls being able to go to school, with regard to progress on the media, and so on. That cannot be compromised. And then the third, we do often when we talk about reconciliation, we talk about Taliban commanders. I think we must have a much broader nationwide perspective when we talk about a reconciliation process. And finally, it is a process that cannot be a replacement for a military engagement, but must be based on a position of strength. So the two must go hand in hand. And of course, as you understand, it must be politically driven, not driven by security or intelligence considerations. These are some of the most important elements in our mandate. There are others, and I'll come back to that. And I'll do that in the context of what I now see as the most immediate challenges that we are facing. And that is, first of all, the Paris Conference, which will take place on the 12th of June in Paris, obviously. We don't have much time available. This conference will build on what happened in Bucharest, which was a conference with the participation of NATO, of course, and troop contributors of the UN, of the World Bank, and the European Union. It was a conference where, for the first time, the security issues were placed in a broader perspective. Now, we must move from there and to the Paris conference. That conference will be mainly focused on civilian issues, on development and political questions that we have to address. And the centerpiece for that meeting will be the new Afghan National Development Strategy, which is now being launched after much work and after consultations with thousands of Afghans and also with the assistance of the international community. That will be the centerpiece, together with the Afghanistan Compact, which was adopted in London in February 2006. And what must we do? We must demonstrate in Paris a clear commitment to support the Afghan National Development Strategy. What does it mean? It means more resources are required. More resources are required. And we should go to countries who are potential donor countries, but who today do not contribute perhaps what we could expect, and ask them to be more generous in supporting the government of Afghanistan and the people of Afghanistan. That is one element. The second is greater aid effectiveness. We have to spend the resources that we have better than we do today. It is almost amazing that after so many years, we still duplicate to an extent that is almost unimaginable sometimes. And we discover examples every day. We still spend the money in a way that does not create Afghan capacities, but that bring in consultants and bring in capacity and lift them out again, making the projects that we put in place almost unsustainable. We must spend our money in a way that leaves more of it in the country and not so, as much as today is the case in the donor country. And we must have less tied aid. Yes, I know that much of this is difficult because the situation is such on the ground that corruption is there. There is a lack of accountability. So it is difficult, of course, for nations to tell their parliaments to ask for permission by the parliaments to use the money in the way that we now seek. But I do believe that we're moving in that direction. And I think also the visit that took place by the administrator of the USAID about a week ago, Henrietta Ford, and a couple of other ministers of development, went in the right direction. I believe that there is a growing understanding and a growing commitment that assistance has to be used more according to Afghan plans and authority and priorities, more in a way that leaves capacity on the ground, and more in a way where we use the resources available from Afghanistan rather than importing resources from the outside. Just to mention a tiny little example, tiny little unimportant example, but very few countries today make use of Afghan mineral water, which is perfectly good, but still most of the donor countries today import water from the outside. It's a tiny little thing, but why not try to move in the direction where we make use of what the Afghans can offer instead of importing everything that we need to do our work. So greater aid effectiveness is important. Better coordination, I mentioned that already. Better ability to monitor the assistance. And when we now restructure the UN mission, we will try to put up there a component whose task it is to monitor aid effectiveness and see to it that we from the international community and the Afghans spend the money in the best possible way so that we can avoid waste, avoid duplication, and ultimately save time and serve the Afghan people better than we do today. But then, of course, there has to be another component in this. It's not only the international community that has to do things differently. It's also the government of Afghanistan. We need to see a stronger emphasis on combating corruption inside Afghanistan. It is important. We need to see a greater willingness to demonstrate the right level of accountability from the Afghan side. If not, we will not be able to turn the international community around and to spend the resources the way we want to do, clearly in line with Afghan plans and priorities. And then let me say one thing at the end on this particular topic. We all need to take more of a national perspective. Today we have a situation where one country is focused on one province, where they have their military forces, another on a second, and a third on a third province. And very few have a truly national perspective. Now, what is the result of that? Some of the provinces that are perhaps among the poorest provinces are provinces who do not grow poppy or stop growing poppy, and perhaps also have new and better and more competent governors, still are not given their fair share of the aid. That means we do not use the time and our resource in a way that can immunize those provinces against potential future problems. We should all have a nationwide perspective on what we do. At the Paris conference, we will also, in addition to supporting the ANDS and support the Afghanistan Compact, where progress has been made, but you know, where there are still serious shortfalls. In addition to doing that, we have to set certain priorities. And what are their priorities, these priorities, in my view? The one is the police and justice system. With regard to the ANA, the army, it is not going badly at all. And we heard the declaration, the announcement by President Karzai when he was in Bucharest, that from this autumn the ANA will take responsibility for Kabul. That is an important step in the right direction. But with the police and justice system, we're still lagging seriously behind. The United States is putting immense resources in behind the police training project. But I would like to see the Europeans also do more. We have today a relatively modest European police training program. And I would appeal and have appealed to the Europeans to do much more to raise their level of ambition on this critical issue. And I do believe from visits we've had a week and a half ago to key European capitals that there is a growing understanding that this has to happen. And I hope that this will materialize in concrete policies over the next weeks and months. And then in addition to having more trainers, we must be sure that we do the same thing, that we have a common purpose, a common program with regard to how we train the police. It is absolutely required if we are to make the headway. That is urgently required. And then, of course, on the justice system, where the situation is even worse than it is with regard to the police. And let me say from experience, you mentioned the Balkans and elsewhere, it's strange to see every time we go into a conflict area or into a country, we suffer the problems that Afghanistan do. It seems that the justice sector comes as the last point on our list of priorities. And it means that we are not able to establish that basis that is so required for the economy to grow, for people to feel safe, for rule of law to be respected, etc., as we would have liked. And we see it again in Afghanistan. This is an issue where we have to spend more resources, both with regard to financial resources and manpower resources. That's one priority. The second is governance. I mentioned to you the so-called IDLG that has been set up dealing with sub-national governance. That means the provinces, the districts, etc. That is important. And it was a very good step by the president to establish this office with a very competent leader. But governance is much more than what happens at the provincial and district level. We must also attack the problems that we face at the central Kabul level. And we are working with the Afghan authorities and with the government and with the president to see how can we do that. Not only to see to it that more competent people are brought into key positions, but also to see to it that there are training programs for those in the administration to improve the qualification, and finally to ensure that we have young people coming in and being trained for the administration, both centrally and locally, in order to ensure that the progress we meet the progress we made is sustainable. That is important, and I hope that we will see progress on this over the next few weeks and months. And then my third priority is agriculture. We spend tremendous resources on school, education, on health, on water, on the roads, etc., and all this is good. But we have to build the economy from the bottom. And I do believe that this has not been emphasized sufficiently today. Afghanistan is and will continue to be for quite some time an agricultural society. We need to reform and modernize the agriculture. And we have to place that higher on our agenda than we have had done so far. It's important for a number of reasons. It's important to feed the people. And as we've seen, that is a problem and it will remain a problem every year in the coming years. We have to do it in order to strengthen the economy as such, and we have to do it as a component in our counter-narcotics strategies. So these are three priorities that I would like to highlight: the police and justice, the governance, and the agricultural sectors. Then we face one important event that will come up late 2009 and in 2010, and that is the elections. The elections will be a tremendous task for all of us. Afghanistan will need international security support, financial support, and technical support. And even if the elections will only be towards the end of 2009, we have little time. The voter registration will start soon. That will take time and has to take place in a phased manner. And you, as you know, I'm sure that the voter registration process itself requires significant preparations. We have to start today, and this is also a matter of discussion with the international community and with the Afghan leadership in Kabul. And let me say, the elections in 2005 and 2006 were relatively successful elections. We cannot afford, and we know how difficult it is from a security point of view, but we cannot afford to see elections in 2009 and 2010 that are less successful than they were a few years ago. If that should happen, then I fear that the Afghan people will lose confidence, or it will affect the confidence of the Afghan people in the process of developing democracy, and it will affect the sustainability of the support and commitment that we see today in the international community. So that is tremendously important. You mentioned the regional dimension and the discussion with Islamabad, with Tehran, and Central Asian countries. It's also part of our mandate. We intend to go both to Islamabad and Tehran in May, and also to visit Central Asian countries. But if we are to make use of that part of our mandate and achieve something, it cannot only become a meeting every 6 months. We have to invest much more time and energy in making the regional dimension work. And it is a dimension with many perspectives. Of course, the insurgency perspective. And of course, with the drug perspective. But it also has an important economic and trade perspective, not least within the area of energy. There is a significant potential here, not only for removing the problems that we face, but for building something positive that can tie the region together. And we all know that without a stable Afghanistan, the entire region will not be as stable as we would like it to be. Let me mention one issue that I should have perhaps touched upon already. It has to do with donor visibility and with the Afghanization process. I meet over and over again countries or institutions or NGOs who say, we need greater visibility on the ground. We need our own flag, our own emblem, or this or that. I would say there's one flag that is required over each and every project in Afghanistan. It's the Afghan flag. We have to make every use of every opportunity we can find to demonstrate that the Afghan government is able to deliver services, that they are able to perform outreach politically and economically. We have to give them credit by the way we formulate our policies and not claim credit for ourselves. If we do not get that right, then it will take even longer before we have the Afghanistan that we seek. Strategic communication is a buzzword that is often used by so many in the international community. And I agree completely that it is important. It is important to demonstrate that Project Afghanistan is not a security project. It's a political project and has to be formulated as such. There we have a tremendous task ahead of us to turn the public around and make them understand it is not a matter only of military men and military campaigns and operation. It's about formulating a policy that is broad and wide and where the military component comes in as one, but only one part of the entire equation. And there we should understand, and this is something I say over and over again, there were summit meetings in Bucharest, and there were summit meetings before, and where there will be an important meeting in Paris. But our commitment to Afghanistan and the future of Afghanistan will not be determined around summit tables. It will be determined around kitchen tables. Kitchen tables where each and every family sit down and discuss, is it worthwhile? Are we doing the right thing? That's where the decisions are being made. Therefore, to communicate the story, the political story, in the right way is so tremendously important. Finally, I have been asked if the expectations that I have met over the last weeks make me feel uneasy. And then my answer is, not at all. I feel the expectations are just right. And why is that? Because I take it for granted that if there are high expectations, that reflects a high level of commitment from those who have the expectations. We all know that this cannot be a matter of one person or one organization. It is an inclusive effort where we have to do the job together. together, but under the Afghan leadership. Therefore, I'm pleased to be here, and I'm pleased to experience the confidence and support that I do experience from the highest authorities of the U.S. administration. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have about a half an hour for questions. I want to just mention for members of the press who are here that there's going to be a special press availability at 1:30 where you'll have a chance to ask your own questions and on camera, et cetera. So I'm not forbidding any here, but just asking for consideration for the civilians in the room. But perhaps we'll be able to get to everybody. Please wait for a microphone and introduce yourself. We'll start right here.
Thank you very much. Raghubir Goyal from India Globe. Great presentation, Mr. Ambassador. My quick question is that, like you said, NATO must do more than what U.S. is doing there. Question is that there have been a number of attacks against the government, even yesterday against President Karzai, and ongoing attacks there, even though we have so many military force there and international community. What do you think that the new government in Pakistan will play the role as far as those attacks and terrorism problems? You think this will reduce under the new government?
I prefer we take many questions at a time,
okay,
because then I can ignore those at a time.
All right, we'll do three at a time, and if that's comfortable for you, gentlemen right there.
Hi, thanks. Alex Thier from the U.S. Institute of Peace. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on what you feel UNAMA's role should be in the political negotiations with the Taliban. You talked about the principles for a reconciliation process, but I wonder what role do you think UNAMA, and particularly on the political side, should have in negotiations, if any?
Anybody else who's ready to go? Right here.
Hi, Ann Richard from the International Rescue Committee. Thank you for holding this, Jessica. It's very interesting. The International Rescue Committee, as perhaps you know, works at the local level in Afghanistan on the National Solidarity Program, which gets development started at very much at the grassroots level. My sense is that on Capitol Hill, congressmen are focused on the role of the provincial reconstruction teams in development, which is a military, not fully military effort, but a military-led effort or organized effort. So as you start your job, I'm sort of curious about your evaluation of these different methods, including also private contractors. Thanks.
Okay, why don't we start with those three, and then we'll do another round.
Thank you very much. With regard to the regional dimension, I understood you wanted my... Does it work?
Yes.
That you asked me about? I will see when I come to Islamabad. I have hopes and I have expectations that we will enter into a constructive dialogue on these matters, and that will apply particularly in Islamabad, which of course is the most important capital to have a dialogue with here, and also then with Tehran and the others. I don't think it's very wise of me to go into detail 2 weeks before I go to Islamabad. But I look forward to a constructive and good dialogue with the authorities of Pakistan. And, of course, there was already last year a border jirga, which was a successful event, and that led to some optimism. And perhaps time has come to look at this again and to move forward with another of these events, and in order to try to institutionalize it so it becomes a more constant dialogue. I think that would be a helpful step. But then there are also many other elements that we'll have to discuss, and I look forward to that. You mentioned the attack against the military parade. I think it demonstrates clearly that the security environment is challenging. it's particularly challenging in some parts of the country in the south. But as we've seen, it can also apply to Kabul. I was there myself on the 14th of January when the attack against the Serena took place. I fortunately left the hotel Serena 22 seconds before the first explosion, and I heard it a little bit down the road. But these incidents, of course, illustrate how unpredictable the environment can be. No doubt about that. But I must also add that for those who say that the security situation is constantly becoming more difficult, I don't agree on that. I don't agree on that. The major part of the country is relatively stable. There is a significant level of crime, yes. But I do believe that the security situation is not worsening, and that, in fact, in some parts of the south, we're also making progress. And, of course, what we see from the insurgency in shift of tactics is also a reflection of the fact that they understand they have to move to a more defensive. It's an expression of being on the defensive, in my view. Nevertheless, it's serious. That kind of attacks are serious. And asymmetric warfare do inspire terror and do inspire fear, and has its effect, no doubt about that. On UNAMA, in general, as I said, I want to see UNAMA spread more across the country, participate in political outreach, trying to do what I feel we don't have today, which is a clear strategy for the various components that we need on the economic side, on the political side, to make it work together with the Afghan authorities and this new idea, LG, that has been created. Now, I've been asked this question about discussions with the Taliban over and over again. And I think the answer I will give, I've already given, which is, should the Afghan government decide to initiate a process of reconciliation, and then I believe that it should happen on the basis of the principles that I've mentioned. And according to our mandate, if the Afghan government wants our support, then we are there to lend them that, support. And this is, as I said, why I insist on, while working with the military, we must protect the integrity of our UN mandate in order to be able, should the time arrive, to play a political role. That's all on this. On the PRTs versus the NSP, we are in a situation where PRTs are almost the only delivery vehicles for development assistance in certain parts of the country. So there is no way other than to have them do it. Is it an ideal solution in the long term? I don't think so. And I was at NATO when the PRT concept was put into place. But I do believe that as we move towards more stable situation, and where we have a more stable situation, that we should have a division of labor between the military and the civilians, which will allow development agencies, NGOs, etc., to do more of the job than we perhaps see today in some parts of the country. And I agree with you with regard to the National Solidarity Program. It's a very valuable program, has achieved a lot on the ground.
I wonder if I can start the second round. First, I want to thank you, and on behalf of everybody, for an extraordinarily clear and candid discussion. I think it's rare to see a person in your position lay out priorities as clearly as you did, or even priorities at all.
It's a little bit unwise.
No, this is a very genuine comment. I wanted to take advantage of it a bit, though, to ask you. You made very clear in your theme throughout all your remarks that you wanted the Afghan government to be in the lead, to be placed first, to be the lead actor. You also make clear the need for efforts to combat corruption and to undo governance reform in a number of areas. There's obviously a tension there because nothing's more invasive of sovereignty than help on rule of law reform and governance reform, et cetera. Talk to us a bit about how you see, how do you attack that tension?
Let me first say, Afghan government in the lead, yes, because I do experience quite often that important development projects are undertaken sometimes without the knowledge of the Afghan government. So how can the Afghan government, with its plans, with its priorities, succeed if we don't respect them? And where PRTs or other players on the ground get there and think and say to themselves, we have some ideas here about what to do. Now, if we want to succeed and spend our money wisely, that is certainly not the way to go about it. We have to show greater respect for the Afghan priorities that they have set. And they have set them with the assistance of the international community. So they should be respected. I think one important thing to put in place over the next weeks and months would be a unit which can trace aid. Where does it come from? Where does it go? And we should trace it on the international side and on the Afghan side. I'm not saying that we should trace each and every project. That is unachievable. But perhaps we should be able to conduct more spot checks in order to also create a certain deterrent effect among both the internationals and the Afghans with regard to how they spend their money. I think that would be wise, and it's something that the Afghans certainly want. Yes, there is tension here when you have the level of corruption that you have. Therefore, I'm always saying to the Afghans, if you want us to spend more money through your core budget or through Afghan trust funds, which we should, you must also demonstrate a greater level of accountability. You must demonstrate that you're ready to combat corruption more than you are today. The two go hand in hand. But then you have a little bit of a chicken and egg situation here. You cannot expect to develop Afghan capabilities if you do not trust them more than you do today. I think time has come to trust them more than we actually do today. There will always be this tension, and we have to live with that tension and try to put into place mechanisms that enable us to control it, as handle it as best as we can. And of course, if you spend money via the trust fund mechanisms, then you do also have a certain accountability mechanism there via the World Bank. So this should be a mechanism which enables us to follow Afghan priorities and at the same time have a decent level of international assurance and accountability. So there are ways, and I think we should use them more. And as I said, I detect now among the development community and the big donors a greater readiness to look at how we can do that and spend money more through their budgets or through these trust funds. Is the right way to go?
Yes, please. Well, and if you would just introduce yourself.
Ambassador Jonathan Landay with McClatchy Newspapers. It's good to see you again. You talk about needing to have an arrangement where the military is just one, the security and military aspect is supposed to be just one aspect of the overall Project Afghanistan, as you called it. But at least until now, for the most part, the military aspect has been the predominant effort in Afghanistan, and we see where that's gotten. My question is, have you discussed with the Bush administration, or will you discuss with the Bush administration, some kind of arrangement that will give you some kind of assurance that military, that U.S. military, or NATO military commanders are going to be prepared to give you equal time, as it were, to give you the opportunity to raise your effort to their effort or subsume them in your effort? I'm not clear about how you're going to achieve that aspect of it.
and that I understand well, because I think that challenge is a difficult challenge. It's a difficult challenge. You have on the ground 50,000 troops, 50,000 troops engaged. Of course, they are the dominant element on the ground, no doubt about that. But I do think that also when I discuss this with the military themselves, and also in Europe and here in Washington, I'm just one quarter through my visit, I do feel that there is this readiness to say, let us look at what we are doing, not from a military perspective, but from a broader political perspective. And I do hope that the conference we have in Paris will bring us some way in that respect. And we're trying also to sit down with the military and say, look, if this is our common thinking, how do we go about in order to achieve it? It's a tough challenge, but we have to make it. And I must say, I looked at the one of the news agencies, big news agencies. I looked at a photo file they had one day, 440 photographs, and I skipped through them very, very quickly. And I found, I guess, 380, 390 photographs of military personnel. I found 7 or 8 of a foreign dignitary visiting Karzai. And then there were 20, 25 of civilian projects. How do we turn this around? It's a tremendous challenge. But I think it's simply think that we have to give the political elements more prominence. What are we doing on the election side? What are we doing with regard to extending the reach of the Afghan government across the country? How do we do this? How do we improve the police and justice? How do we develop the regional dimension? Those are important pillars in that political story that we have to develop. And I think that is so critical to ensuring the political support that we want for our publics in the future. But again, I'm 15 days into my job, but it is a major challenge to me.
Yes.
Tahir Andrabi, Georgetown University. Ambassador, it was refreshing to note that agriculture is one of your priority areas. Pakistan is blamed for pushing terrorists into Afghanistan. One thing that really goes into Afghanistan from Pakistan and is not mentioned very much is the wheat that is smuggled in the last year, causing domestic stocks in Pakistan to fall down. So my question is that in order to Afghanistan to grow wheat, you have to replace the poppy with it, which is a very serious problem. So do you have, within that agriculture priority sector, do you have any plan how you go about it? And just very second question, picking on the earlier question, a supplement question to that, is there a possibility in distant future where you could see NATO forces being replaced by the blue helmet forces in Afghanistan, given the strong rejection that the people have of Afghanistan have had against foreign forces throughout their history? Thank you.
Yeah, we'll take one more.
Hi, Richard Weitz, Hudson Institute. I wasn't sure if you had given any thought to Iran's possible role as you move forward.
One of the main sort of the issues that the Afghan
could you just introduce
I'm
yourself?
I'm Sivan Mayun and I'm a student here in Washington.
Where are you?
Here.
There you are.
In the past, one of the issues that the UNAMA has had with the Afghan government has been mostly on appointments at the local level, governors as well as police chiefs, especially police chiefs. President Karzai has shown has had to accommodate some UN opinion on that front. But now, recently, he has shown nostalgia for his past appointments, people who he had to kick out of their jobs to replace them with people who are more friendly to the outside world. When you say Afghanize the process, when you say support the Afghan government, does this go far enough to just say yes to any appointment President Karzai makes or to his decisions in terms of police chiefs and governors?
Let me start with the latter. When I said greater responsibility for the Afghan government, I supplemented that with what we want to see from the Afghan government. It has to go hand in hand. I think time has come, and I think if we demonstrate to the Afghans that we invest more confidence in them, that they will also be more likely to act in a manner that will enable us to do that. So I think, again, it's a chicken and egg situation, but I do think that there is a, it's the right way to go. And let me also say, they are doing some of the right things in this respect. I mentioned the IDLG, which addresses subnational governments, provincial, district level. Things are happening. There's no doubt about that. The head of that directorate has already made rather bold decisions with the full support of the president. So things are moving in that direction. But we have to see. We have to see more. We have to see more. But as you understand, Afghanization is really something I believe in. We have to, through our action, through the resources we spend, demonstrate our readiness to build Afghan capabilities. You know, it's terribly frustrating. It's terribly frustrating when some donor country institution selects a project, brings in everything it takes, absolutely everything it takes, builds the project, and leaves again. And what's left is the building, or this and that, and nothing to sustain it. So is Afghanization the right way to go? Well, I'll ask you the question, is there any alternative? If we want to see sustainability of what we're doing, and if you want to see Afghans learning to do things the right way, I don't think there is any alternative. And we have to draw the consequences from that. And some countries are spending almost all their money through Afghan channels. And it works. Most of it works. NATO, UN, is there any chance over the foreseeable future to see NATO troops be replaced by UN troops? Right. I think the answer to that is no. I think the answer to that is no. I think NATO is in the unique position of having a command structure and a force generation system that is effective and that works. And I think in the current security situation, there is no prospect for that kind of handover from NATO to any other organization. I think, and you must also look at the number of countries taking part in the NATO operation, in the ISAF. I think today there are 40 countries, which means one-fifth of the countries of this globe. I don't think you will find any other military operation with such a representation, global representation. Yes, we would like to have some other countries join. Yes, we would like to have perhaps more from other regions of this world. But to change from the one to the other framework, I do not think is in the cards in the foreseeable future. On agriculture, do I have any program for agriculture? I think we need a little bit more time to think more precisely about that. You know, I'm not an agricultural expert. And as I said, after 15 days, perhaps it's to ask a little bit too much if I come with a clear agricultural strategy. But I do believe that while it is important to focus on the services such as school and health is tremendously important, and we have made significant progress, then it is even more important to make sure that there is a functioning basis of an economy present. And that is not the case today. When you see the growth figures for Afghanistan, they may look impressive. We're talking about 13% last year, 8% this year. But what is it really? It's a relatively modest agricultural sector where it doesn't take much to show progress or developments on to show an effect on the total overall growth index. And then you have the international aid that comes in and the effects of it. And we have to get away from that. Of course, we have to do things on other areas also, like on the energy sector. And there is a potential, at least for domestic consumption. On the mining sector, and there's a potential there as well. But I think the basis for it all must be a strong and functioning agricultural sector. And I believe, as I said, that that is an important contribution to reducing also the poppy cultivation. Iran, I look forward to my visit to Tehran sometimes in May. And I believe also with Iran that it will be possible to develop a relationship of cooperation and confidence when it comes to the whole regional dimension here. And I look forward to that visit.
Thanks. Mr. Ambassador, Gary Mitchell from the Mitchell Report. I want to follow up on, in a sense, I want to follow up on a question that Jessica Matthews raised, which was she began by saying that you've been uncommonly clear about what the priorities are from your point of view about coordination and reconciliation and governance, et cetera. I want to ask you to sort of imagine that we're meeting here a year from today, and the message that you are delivering is we have really made substantive progress. And the question that I'd like to pose is, do you have now or do you anticipate identifying some both quantitative and qualitative measures that would allow you to support the notion that we've made significant progress? And I'm not asking for benchmarks today, and I understand you're 15 days into it. But what I'm struck by is in another country nearby, for the last 5 years, we've been hearing we're making progress. We need 6 more months. You know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's been a real bonanza for metaphors. And so my question is whether you anticipate that that in your work you might be able to, a year from now, identify some quantitative and qualitative measures that would underscore or support the notion that progress has really been made.
I see a hand. Is it up? Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Lauren Fries with the State Department. I was hoping you could just discuss a little the future of the JCMB.
All right, we'll take one more.
Jeff Lunstead from American University. You mentioned in passing a few times counter-narcotics. Obviously, governance, justice, police, agriculture, all those things affect them, but it works the other way around. You can't deal with corruption or governance or justice or any of these things without dealing with counter-narcotics. Could you speak to that a little more directly?
Benchmarks, certainly not, and you said that yourself. I remember from Bosnia, one general came from Brussels. I was then the SRSG there and had a police mission of 2,000 and 1,500 civilians at the time. And this general came to me, of course, impatient, and said, tell me how long time you need to finish this and that work. And I said, general, you can tell me how long time it takes to move an armored personnel carrier from point A to B to point B. I cannot tell you how long a political process takes. It's as simple as that. Therefore, I must say, yes, we should have certain ambitions with regard to how speedily we can move forward. But I'm instinctively not inclined to put any deadlines on the efforts that we are trying to undertake. That doesn't mean that I'm not impatient, and we have to move forward as quickly as possible. But the benchmarking in terms of putting deadlines on when we do things, that I'm very reluctant to do. But what I hope to do is to develop certain criteria, for instance, with regard to aid effectiveness, with regard to the competence of the Afghan administration, building that up, whereby we can measure
progress, yes, and I think that is doable. I think that's doable. And as I said, I do not want, you know, I really do not intend to sit, and this also relates to the question about the JCMB, I do not intend to sit in Kabul, and my role as chairman or this or that will be to say, I now give the floor to Mr. X and Mrs. Y and so on. This is not a productive way of moving forward. As I said, coordination processes very easily develop into that kind of exercise. What I want to see is that our coordination mechanisms are as delivery-oriented as they possibly can be. What does that mean in concrete terms? Give me a little bit more time to see how that can be developed. But I think it's important. And in order to do that, you have to have at least certain indicators available to you, not least with regard to how we spend aid and how the Afghans spend that aid. So we'll certainly do that. JCMB, the Joint Coordination and Monitoring Board, established in London through the Afghanistan Compact. I'm afraid that it was well intended, and we need that kind of mechanism. But again, this is really what I feel has developed into the process-oriented mechanisms that we do not want. And our main effort now is to see how can we simplify it? Do we really need all the working group and contact groups and all we have that absorb tremendous amount of time from the international community, from embassies, etc., and not least from an Afghan administration that do not have the resources required? How can we free time to do work instead of talking about work? That, I think, is one of my main objectives when it comes to the JCMB. You are nodding. Hmm? Good. Then the State Department is on board. Counter-narcotics, why did I not touch upon that more than I did? There's a good reason. We have worked on counter-narcotics strategy for years. And we have seen that last year's poppy production was a record. We hope that this year we will see a slight decline in production and that we may see more poppy-free provinces. We hope. But we don't know. I mentioned some elements in what I see as important also in the counter-narcotics strategy. The governance issue, the right people in the right places. I mentioned the police and justice are tremendously important. I mentioned the agriculture and the need for modernization of the agricultural sector. And then, of course, you can add issues like eradication and so on. But there, I must say, I feel that after the short period of time I've been on the ground, to pretend having a recipe for how to move forward on that issue would be a little bit too much. But I can assure you it's an issue that, of course, is at the top of our agenda and that we discuss almost every day during the time I've been in Kabul so far. Was there one last question that I didn't get?
Oh, I think you got them all. Is there anybody else? Because if not, oh, okay. Go ahead, right here. We'll go here. Coming to you.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Jeroen Koorman from the Belgian Embassy here in Washington. You mentioned that you want to do more outreach, that UNAMA should do more outreach and be more present in the field, I assume also geographically. Could you elaborate on how you want to do that, especially in the current security situation? Could you also say how you want to reconcile this need for being more present and reach out more with the need to protect your own staff who go in the field, especially if we know that those forces who are against stability in Afghanistan will certainly not be very likely to welcome you.
Okay, last question here.
Thank you. Refreshing indeed, but I must begin with a little retort to my AU colleague who said you can't address counter-corruption with counter-narcotics without you can address any of the other issues without addressing counter-narcotics. Mm-hmm. And I would just retort, you know, that you can't address the narcotics issue without addressing corruption. And so I was very, of course, the two issues are inextricably linked, and we all know that now. But my point is an interesting set of priorities. I was on the first anti-corruption assessment mission a few years ago to, on behalf of UNDP. And one of our key findings was that until donor corruption is addressed, you can't expect the Afghan government to address corruption, that the credibility of the donor community there is so tiny and corruption is so rampant. There are no monitoring and reporting mechanisms in place. There are no mechanisms in place to resolve corruption issues when Afghan people face this dilemma. That may be the first priority, and maybe this is a sequencing issue, should be addressing donor corruption first, then ask the Afghan government to address corruption. We must set the example, I think. Mm-hmm.
I think you're right in a way. You're right in a way when it comes to pointing your finger at the fact that the international community is not effective, and the Afghans are not effective. There's no doubt that corruption and mismanagement exist, or misuse of resources exist. I've said that we address that constantly with the Afghan authorities, certainly. And they raise it themselves. They also raise their criticism with regard to how the international community behaves. And we should listen to their concerns in that respect. And I believe that we will only really be able to move forward when we have a more of a grip on corruption, more a grip on the question of accountability and on impunity. Now, you mentioned that this goes for both the international community and for the Afghan authorities. Well, one of the things I mentioned a while ago is I would like to see in place mechanisms that can monitor the aid flow on both sides, and where Afghans can come to us and say, we don't believe that's going well. And you should look at that. And where the international community could do the same. And we are looking now at how to restructure the mission in order to bring in a component that can look more profoundly at this kind of problem. You will never be able to trace each and every dollar or euro or whatever. But you can, I believe, through some kind of spot check system, be able to at least look at some of it and also to have a deterrent value. So this certainly is one of the aspects that we are looking at. How can we address it? And you're absolutely right. Counter-narcotics and corruption go hand in hand. And crime, counter-narcotics, crime, insurgency, corruption, four issues that have to be tackled, and they really form part of one area of problems. If that was the last question, then
we had,
there was one more.
There was the, now I can't remember, did we get both?
But
On the outreach, no, only to tell you that all your considerations are considerations that I have myself. We want to expand beyond where we are today. We are looking at where we should expand. And the two most important questions in that respect are, what about the security situation? We cannot hide behind inside armored personnel carriers. We have to operate in the field in a different way than what the military do. That represents a security challenge, and security must be taken seriously, and I certainly do that. The other is, and so many places related to it, where can we be useful? That is a security issue, but it's also an issue of where are the other actors? So this is also, I would say, the second consideration when we look at where to expand, where can we be useful? We are not going to go to places just because somebody wants us to go there or asks us to go there. We are going to go there if we consider that we can be useful, where we can have an optimal effect, the optimal effect, and also work in acceptable security conditions. But then that was the last question. And then I want to say something, because there was a title to this speech that nobody had noticed that I didn't address at all. And it was a fresh start, question mark. And to that, I would like to make two comments. One is, in spite of all the problems that we have now discussed, and there is no lack of them, and we are all aware of them, in spite of all these problems, we have made quite important progress. And don't tell me that having 6 million kids at school is not tremendous progress. Even if the education is not of the quality we would like. Don't tell me that having thousands of health clinics built up is not progress. Or thousands of kilometers of road paved and rehabilitated. Or about, I think, 300 newspapers and periodicals existing today. 14 TV channels. Mobile phones, internet available in about, I think, 150 towns around Afghanistan. Is that not progress? Of course, it's tremendous progress if you look at where this country was during the Taliban regime. And sometimes when we discuss progress in Afghanistan, I'm disappointed to see how people do not realize the situation that country was during the Taliban regime. We're not there anymore. We moved away from it in a very dramatic fashion. But it means also that while moving on security, while moving on development, there is this cluster of issues that we have not addressed sufficiently and that we need to address if all this is going to be sustainable. That is the police and justice sector. It is the governance in particular. The pillar that needs to be there if all our efforts can be sustained. That's why I say this must be our priorities. And I'm a fresh start. I think there is a certain movement on the police. There is a movement on the governance side. There are new trends on the aid effectiveness side. And I do believe and I do feel that there is a little bit of a new atmosphere in the international community and in Kabul. That's what we have to build on. Then, not a fresh start, but a greater momentum. That's what I hope for. Thank you.
I'm going to thank you on behalf of everybody, and you go with everybody's best wishes for success.